Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us today on our podcast series, Mergers in the Post-Pandemic Era. I'm Eric Winston. I'm the General Counsel and Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer at Emphasis.
Hey, and I'm Vaibhav Parikh, leader at Nishidesh Associates and co-head of M&A and Private Equity Practice.
Together, we will take you through the journey of how we, as legal practitioners from two different parts of the world and in different roles, I'm an in-house counsel and Vaibhav is outside counsel, are handling mergers and acquisitions across the world and from different vantage points.
So welcome, Pratik and Eric, to the session on due diligence.
Thank you, Vaibhav. I appreciate it. As I mentioned in our previous podcast, over the past 14 months, Emphasis has completed two M&A transactions. These were in part capabilities-driven acquisitions. And one of our recent acquisitions, we worked very closely with Pratik, who is a partner at Bain, focusing on the technology space. Pratik, welcome. And please, if you would, introduce yourself.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Vaibhav. Hi, I'm Pratik Majumdar. I've been with Bain around 14, 15 years now. I focus on the technology space and I'm based out of Bangalore. So I've actually been part of and seen multiple diligences and acquisitions and post-merge integrations of companies, especially technology companies from India looking to acquire in India and abroad. And in that context, I have recently also worked with Eric on the diligence acquisition and integration of a very interesting asset earlier this year. So look forward to today's conversation.
Thank you very much, Pratik. The topic we'll discuss today will be M&A due diligence. We'll also talk a bit about integration in the post-pandemic world. It'd be interesting for our listeners to hear about how the blueprint for due diligence has changed in the post-pandemic era from a pre-acquisition, post-acquisition, and integration standpoint. To start with, Pratik, if you would, what's your view on diligence in the post-pandemic era?
So, you know, the last couple of years, right, we've seen a lot from a human suffering perspective, but these years have also fundamentally changed the way we approach work, the way we approach diligence, and even post-merger integration, right? So I think if we start at the beginning, like the way companies used to qualify potential acquisition targets, that's become more efficient. Earlier, people would just fly down, meet people, and later look at data. Now we are seeing a lot more data-backed qualification and faster qualification. I think that's one thing that's changed even before the diligence starts. For the due diligence phase of looking at companies during acquisition, the whole process, again, has become more focused and more efficient. Part of it is driven by the fact that the access to data, it was always there, but the focus on analyzing data has increased. Of course, throughout the last 4 or 5 years, people will always put data in a data room and then kind of look for in-person conversations to get a sense of the leadership team and all that while the data is being analyzed. But now, a large part of the diligence around leadership, culture is also happening remotely, right? Because people are comfortable working remotely, meeting remotely. And also because these 2 years of constrained travel has kind of forced us to look for other ways to access the kind of data we would look at. For example, right now we look at online forums, social data to get a sense of how happy people at a company are, the kind of culture at the company, or the think of leaders. So I think that has fundamentally changed. And I think this change is here to stay. And of course, even post the acquisition process, if the acquisition does go through, integration earlier used to be a lot of in-person workshops, right, with people traveling. That, again, has now become more remote. We are seeing a lot of integration planning, integration workshops happening remotely. And they are as efficient as they were. So I think these are some of the changes that we are seeing. And I think these are the changes that will hold true post-pandemic as well. But would love to get your thoughts, Eric Weber, based on what you are seeing.
You know, it's been interesting in my view, right? I think early on, in the early days of COVID, obviously the market wasn't as frothy. And as it picked up, I think also there was some time that it took, say, the first 6-12 months for people to get used to interacting virtually, right? And the virtual diligence perhaps was not quite as efficient as it's become. I think certainly in the last year, people have become quite accustomed to working virtually and working in the M&A world virtually as well. I do think that, and I wonder, Vaibhav, if you agree with this statement, which is there are certain aspects I mean, legal, I think, lends itself very well to working virtually, right? We're used to working in data rooms, but perhaps there are other functions and other stakeholders, like for us in the technology world, we're sometimes sitting across the table from each other talking about complex capabilities are perhaps better served, as an example, in person. I don't know, Vaibhav, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. In fact, let me give my thought process on what I saw last year. Last year, when the M&A started, what I really saw was people were doing a lot of onshore M&As rather than cross-border. They were not willing to go and accept things virtually and start doing cross-border. And then slowly, once they all got used to doing it virtually, they started doing cross-border. And I also agree with you, Eric, saying that some functions can be done remotely without loss of efficiency. In some functions, there is a need for interaction, either on physical level or even on virtually, it needs to be very closely done. And I think people are getting hang of it. The only real thing where people need to figure out how to do virtually is the social connection. Because often when there are two companies which are integrating with each other, you need to make sure they are socially connected. And that really is not something which can be efficiently done virtually. And you know, how to judge a person, how do you get the smell test, how do you get those kind of things is something which needs to be figured out from a virtual perspective. That's what I'm seeing. Let me move ahead. Pratik, what kind of deals are you seeing? Can you tell us a little bit about kind of transaction? Are there changing transaction? What kind of things worked in the past? What kind of things will not work now and work differently?
So let me break that down. Maybe the first part is the number of transactions we are seeing and the kinds of transactions we have seen. Over the last 24 months, frankly, given that I'm in the technology space, we are actually seeing an incredible number of deals, right? Both on the corporate M&A side and the PVC side. For example, if you look at the pure private equity deals, right? We've looked at the global data and the number of deals actually fell, right? From 4,100 in 2019 to 3,100 in 2020, according to the data we have. But the share of tech deals went up. The technology deals now account for about a third of all the deals happening globally. And the average deal values have, of course, increased because we've seen a surge in valuations, right? In India, it's a similar picture because technology, be it IT services, be it consumer tech, technology deals now account for about almost 40% of all deals by value. The good news is in India, we've actually seen an uptick in both the deal volumes and numbers in 2020 compared to 2019. So you're seeing a lot of action on that front. Even on the corporate side, right? Over the last 2 years, we have just seen a big boom in deals that, for example, tech service companies are doing. A lot of these deals are more to acquire capabilities, at times to acquire clients and get into new geographies. But recently, we've over the last 6 months, right, we've seen the war for talent. In today's day and age, in the world of technology, whoever has talent wins. Recently, we're actually seeing a lot of CEOs talking to us, mulling the possibility of acquiring companies just to get talent in newer locations. That's an interesting trend that we are seeing in terms of the number of transactions and the kinds of transactions. So I think that's broadly to your first question, Vaibhav, and to the second point on what worked and what didn't. Historically, there would be a razor focus on cost and revenue synergies. But I think there have been enough stories of failures because people didn't focus on talent as much. And in today's day and age, especially given how important talent is, that is something that needs to change. And over the last 12 months, especially, we have seen companies investing a lot more on the talent side of the equation during the integration process and during the diligence process. So the need to kind of lay out why this acquisition makes sense, both for the people of the company being acquired and also the company that is acquiring, has become much greater than it ever was. And the good news is companies are focusing on it. Companies are focusing a lot more on culture. Companies are focusing on not only the retention package, which is important, but more importantly, the communication and change management and taking people along. I think that's something that historically didn't work so well for most deals. But I think we're seeing a lot more of it, a lot more focus now on this. And hopefully things will be much better in future because talent is more important now than it ever was.
Yeah, especially in technology world, Pratik, I also agree. In fact, last couple of years, what we have seen also has been that in technology space, the M&As have increased. And because India is a talent hub, we have seen a lot of acquisitions happening in the US, which has subsidiaries in India. And a lot of those acquisitions do happen for talents. We are also seeing different kind of acquisitions like Acquihire and others, where they are just looking for getting talent and nothing else. So a lot of companies are setting up subsidiaries, or if they have a subsidiary in India, they are just simply going and acquiring talents and doing an Acquihire. So you're so right on that concept of that's what is happening more.
Yeah, I think for us, you know, we see as we focus on capabilities in the first instance, at least the last couple of acquisitions we've been involved in, talent and capabilities sort of go hand in hand, right? And so that's always been part of our calculus. And from there, it's to both your points, what's the fit? What's the cultural fit? How do we know things will work well and we'll get the synergies we're looking at and looking for to make the transaction beneficial to all parties involved and to all the company stakeholders? So I do think the focus has been on talent, but more so even keenly in the last, say, whatever it is, 6 months, 1 year, with the great resignation and all the things that sort of we're seeing going on. I think, of course, India is a place that we look, but geographically across the globe, I think everybody's looking everywhere, right? So it's been rather interesting.
Yeah, and the shift is visible. Right now, people do so much from the perspective of, okay, tailoring messages to different sets of people when you're acquiring, right? Tailoring messages, then using innovative channels. You see CEOs doing podcasts. There's a cascaded communication line. So CEOs talk, have a town hall, the next level joins it, but then they do their own town halls with their own organization. So there's a lot more focus on communication. And I'm glad that it's happening, because eventually at the senior most level, you know why the acquisition is happening and you probably know it's right and it's a good thing. But the focus on making sure the talent through the ranks knows it and participates in the excitement, that's most welcome.
Yep, absolutely. So to shift gears for a moment here, Pratik, Vaibhav, are you, Pratik, seeing ESG scores as, or scoring and thought around ESG as part of your due diligence checklist? And how are you thinking about it going forward?
So it's an idea whose time has come. So it is. So we are seeing a lot of traction as a company right now, especially in the more mature markets. I personally, given that I focus on technology and I'm based out of India, the focus is probably like I'm seeing less of it than a lot of my peers are. But it is something we definitely expect will pick up. But I can talk through some of the toolkits that we are seeing, and it's so comprehensive. So in ESG, for example, right now, when we do a diligence, we actually give scores, right, on each of E, S, and G, and compare them to benchmarks to see if the company is doing well compared to peers in that industry. Because, of course, a mining company will have very different environmental impact, for example, than a technology company, right? So it's important to look at peers. And the toolkit has evolved so much, right? Like, for example, now in E, or environment, we not only look at carbon footprint, we look at waste, emissions, impact on air and water quality, water management, biodiversity and animal welfare, land use, material use. It's just a full gamut. Same thing, right? On S also, look at factors both inside the company and outside. For example, inside the company, how is employee health and safety? How's work standards, fair wages? How's diversity and inclusion? While externally, we look at, okay, what impact is a product or service having on external safety of society? What's the health and wellness impact? And so on. And in G, of course, a lot of the standard fair sourcing practices kick in, but we also look at anti-competitive behavior, indirect economic impacts, corruption, fairness in tax payment, the role the company is playing in geopolitical sensitivities. It's a very comprehensive toolkit now, which is significantly more evolved compared to where we were 2-3 years ago. And that is being taken seriously in more mature markets for sure. And I think over a period of time, we'll see that playing out in India as well.
In fact, maybe I will just add a line, couple of lines here. What we are seeing as a lawyer, when we are doing due diligence, we are actually seeing this coming as a part of questionnaire now, which was not there, let's say, 2 years ago, where we are asking, what is your ESG policy? You know, what is your tomorrow You know, how do you measure it? How do you really address if there are issues coming up on ESG? We also seeing a lot of questions, and maybe, you know, that's a topic by itself, and we should discuss ESG completely in a separate podcast. But we are seeing a lot of issues being addressed even in documentation. So, for example, if there's a violation of ESG, then they want certain action to be taken. If they want to escalate it, we see a lot of things on ESG being addressed now in a deal, in an M&A deal, than we ever saw it before. So I agree with you, Pratik. It's something which is here to stay.
Absolutely. Emphasis as a company, by the way, is doing its own work on ESG. And so as we think about the targets, we want to at least see, you know, that kind of corporate responsibility focus on ESG, you know, at the same level that we're at, and see what does that roadmap look like. Have they been working about on it? Have they built out a roadmap? Are they working towards some goals? And how does that match up with what we're doing and what our expectations for our company are over time, right?
I think just as a closing comment, you know, COVID is going to become endemic now. You know, it's no longer a pandemic. You know, things are going to be, just people are used to it. What is still going to change once it becomes endemic? You know, and what was there pre-COVID, which will never return back, you know, post-COVID? And what are lessons we learned from the COVID, which we should take it forward?
I think that's a very interesting question. And I think the whole digitization journey that COVID accelerated, that's irreversible, right? Digitization of work processes, people working remotely, all that is here to stay. Of course, I'm hoping the degree of human interaction in person increases. And I think it surely will. Compared to the last 2 years, it'll probably increase, but we'll never go back to where we were earlier. Travel will always be lesser. But one huge thing that improved us as a community and workplaces during COVID was the focus on mental health. I hope even post-COVID that stays.
Eric, any last words on what is likely to change and what is going to be staying?
Yeah, I agree with Pratik. I think a lot of the virtual interactions in the M&A world will be with us going forward, full stop. I do think some aspects of sitting across the table in an M&A transaction, you know, assessing both points of view, the target and the acquirer, to make those determinations on whether there's a good fit or not, will perhaps continue to be more over time. We'll see them be in person when travel starts to pick up. But I have no doubt, absolutely, the virtual nature of transactions and due diligence is here to stay. And I look forward to, and I'm optimistic that the three of us will get together maybe soon, and we'll start to get back to not quote unquote normal, but to what I would classify as sort of the new normal, which would be more travel and hopefully a lot more personal interactions and so on.
Yeah, Eric, in fact, I agree with you. It will be a hybrid kind of a thing where it is my view is that next couple of years, virtual will be the norm and meeting physically will be an exception. Maybe over a period of time when, you know, public memory is short, you know, things will change. But that seems to be the direction which I am seeing companies are taking going forward. But with this, I think let's end this podcast. And thank you so much, Pratik. Really appreciate it. Eric, it's always great to do discussion with you. So hopefully we will do another one soon.
Yep. Likewise. Thank you, Pratik.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So do join us. Send us your questions. We'd love to hear from you. What are you working on? As long as it's legal for you to share. Are there any ESG implications and impact that you're working on? We'd love to know about that. Send us your questions, recommendations, your views.
Our email address and social media handles are in the podcast description below. Please do like, follow, and share on all channels. And we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.